Welcome everyone to another episode of Kowalski Analysis. This is actually episode 102, and this is the podcast where we delve deep into the topics that most shy away from. In a world where the surface level often gets the most attention, we're here to explore the depths of what it truly means to navigate life as a single Christian man in today's society. From the complexities of biblical polygyny to the journey of strengthening the masculine spirit, we're here to discuss the unpopular and often overlooked truths that the church might not be talking about. This is a space for open minds and courageous hearts. Whether you're here seeking guidance, understanding, or just curious about the past less traveled, you're in the right place. Our conversations aim to challenge, inspire, and empower you to live a life of purpose and faithfulness. Ladies, we're glad you're tuning in too. Your perspectives and insights are invaluable as we journey together through these discussions. So to all of our listeners, let's dive into the depths, confront the hard questions, and discover the unspoken truths together. Welcome to Kowalski Analysis. And tonight's guest, should I say, is Paul Bauer, host of the Come On Man podcast. Welcome, Paul, to the show. How's it going?
It's going good, man. Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. I'm excited to have this conversation. Let me tell everybody who you are. So for anyone that doesn't know, if you don't know about the Come On Man podcast, Paul Bauer is a recovering nice guy who, after a failed 14-year marriage and another unsuccessful 4.5-year relationship, finally realized that he was the common denominator in both situations. Determined to improve, he embarked on a journey to understand how he could elevate his interactions with women. Along the way, he discovered that enhancing one's skills in the area often leads to overall personal growth. Paul now hosts the highly acclaimed podcast for men, Come On Man, and has earned certification as a master life coach and a master NLP practitioner. Today, he extends his expertise to men worldwide, assisting them on their path to self-improvement. That's a great bio, Paul.
Yeah, man. AI helped me with that.
That's funny you say that, because AI wrote that introduction for Kowalski Analysis that I've been using.
Dude, I use AI so much now. It's ridiculous. Oh my gosh.
People need to get on that.
Just to get my show notes like organized, I often will use AI just to get the ball rolling, and then I'll go through and add bullet points and stuff. But it's such a time saver now.
Oh my gosh, you're right. I can't imagine what it's going to be like in a few years once it gets better, even, like, because it's so good right now. Like I wrote a description for a Christian event I had, just like the Facebook description for the event. And it was like, I couldn't have wrote it. It spit it out in like 10 seconds, and I couldn't have wrote it if you gave me 2 months. I just was that good. And if you give it a good prompt, it's amazing what it'll do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a life-changing tool, especially if you're a content creator like this too. You can, it'll create scripts for you. So like, if you want like a good hook, you know, whatever, for your short form content, it'll do it all. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to tweak it a little bit, because sometimes it's a little woke, but it's a time saver for sure.
So before we get started, if everyone would do me a favor, because we have 7 people or so on here right now, drop a comment, helps more people see this episode. And we're going to be talking about some good stuff. So there might be some men in your world that would need this information, or maybe even women for that matter. But drop a comment, say hello. If you have any questions about anything you hear, drop them in the comments, and if we have time, we'll go over those. Any takeaways, anything that Paul or I say that sticks with you, put that in the comments as well, if you would. And then drop a couple thumbs up or hearts, depending on where you're watching this. Again, helps more people see the episode. So tonight's episode title is Navigating Hypergamy. I didn't even know that term, honestly. When I had Rich Cooper on my show the first time, I think that was the very first time I heard the word hypergamy, and he said something about it, and I was like, what does that mean? And I should have read his book before I had him on. Now I've read it a couple times. But for anyone that doesn't know, how do you describe hypergamy to somebody that's like, you know, asking, or just completely ignorant to it?
Well, if you asked one of those black-pilled, MGTOW doomer guys that have given up on women, you would think it was a tool of the devil to lead women astray. And it's some kind of new thing out there that's causing women to, you know, all be promiscuous and stuff. And it's not true. What it really is, it's a it's women's primary sexual mating strategy. It comes from, you know, it comes from the evolutionary psychology world, right? And it got really popular because of Rollo Tomasi's book, The Rational Male. He goes into depth about it. And basically the way he describes it is that it's dualistic, right? It's women are looking for, you know, a strong alpha male type guy, someone who's exciting, a good protector, you know, kind of person. And then they also want a guy that is a beta provider, someone that gives them comfort, someone that would be good with kids, you know, someone that could make a lot of money and stuff like that, which is funny because there's a lot of guys in the space, rich, sort of included, that likes to talk about how men are success objects. Right. And he's all about, you know, being on your grind and making a lot of money and all that kind of stuff. It's like, well,
women are, I think you said men are success objects, or you meant women, right?
No. So women are sex objects. Men are success objects.
Oh, I'm thinking like six women. I was thinking you were saying women are attracted to success. Oh no, but you're saying no, they're sex objects and men are success objects. I get what you're saying.
Right. Understood. Right. And that's something I learned from Rich Cooper but yeah, a lot of his message, a lot of guys like Andrew Tate are out there telling guys, oh, you got to make all this money, you know, you got to make all this money to get the women. And it's like, well, that, if you think about it, that's the comfort side of hypergamy. That's the beta side of hypergamy. So, that's not what makes women sexually attractive, right? Or sexually attracted to men. So you got to guys need to understand that that's just how women operate. A lot of guys hear this stuff and a lot of the ways it's explained is a woman will settle down with a beta provider, a workhorse, a guy that, you know, puts food on the table, and then she'll go out and bang the hot pool boy. That is one way of looking at it. if she's not getting both, both sides of hypergamy satisfied in a relationship with a single guy, she will get it elsewhere. Right.
Sure.
So if a guy wants to, let's say, get married, right. If a guy wants to get married, he really wants to optimize his alpha side so that he doesn't end up in a dead bedroom, but he also wants to have some of those beta qualities that keeps her around long term, you know? So when, on my bio on social media, I say I'm a hypergamy strategist because a lot of what we're doing when we talk about attraction and maintaining relationships and dating and being successful at dating really is looking at what women respond to and acting accordingly.
Mm-hmm. How did you come up with that? Hypergamy strategist. I like that.
Just because it was, I had been doing the podcast for a couple of years already. And, you know, I just kept seeing all these guys complaining about all these modern hypergamous women, like it's some kind of new thing. And I'm like, you know, you can use this to your advantage. You know, if a guy learns what women respond to, they can take advantage of it, learn to be more attractive and be the kind of guy that women want to be with. Right. Cause a lot of what hypergamy does too, is it's a woman that is looking for a best possible option. So how do you be a woman's best possible option? Well, what do women respond to? You know? So when you look at it from that standpoint, it's like, well, we're coming up with strategies here. So one day, I don't know, it just hit me. It was just like, why don't you call yourself a hypergamy strategist? That's kind of catchy. And so
yeah,
I threw that in my social media.
I think it's perfect. I was listening to one of your videos today. 10 ways to use it to your advantage, I think was the video title. It was close to that if it wasn't that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, how you mentioned it was women's sexual strategy. And I think what you just said about they want the hot, exciting guy, but then they want the safe guy. So, and that's something that I remember, or you said alpha seed and beta need. So they, you know, they want to mate, right. And that there's actually biology around this. I think that when women are ovulating, they're attracted to the more masculine, you know, alpha man. But then when they're not ovulating, they gravitate toward the beta, the safe provider. And I'm sure it stems, you know, from our biology because they want the strongest seed, right? You know?
Yeah, they call that, was it the hoop earring theory? You know, when you see a girl wearing the big hoop earrings and she's all dressed provocatively, she's pretty close to her ovulation cycle and she's trying to attract the hottest guy she can. There's a really good book called The Married Man's Sex Life Primer, and he talks about looking for signs like that. And he calls it ovulation game, but basically you're looking for different signs of where a woman's at in the month, and then how she, you know, where she is in her cycle. You sort of keep a calendar. You know, this is like if you're in a long-term relationship or you're married or something, you know, but you keep a calendar, a secret calendar. You're like, oh, this is red month. This is no go. So, you know, stuff like that. So you act accordingly. You act a little more beta, you know, when she's not feeling well, and then when she's ovulating, you up the alpha a little bit, and it's like that's a good way of doing things. I'm like, that's a lot of work though to keep track of all that.
You know, it really is. And one thing you mentioned, actually, I was surprised to hear it because I think when you and I originally, when I reached out to you originally, and I mentioned that, you know, my belief or my message at least at the moment is polygyny, that I'm a Christian, but I believe that God is completely fine with you marrying more than one woman. And you said that in this video that I watched that hypergamy is basically women's sexual strategy and polygyny is men's strategy. And I was like, okay, so he agrees with me, right? So can you explain that a little bit or expand on that? Like, I didn't know that you...
Yeah, a good way to look at it is Ryan Stone describes it really well in his book, Dread. But he says if you put a man in a room with a bunch of attractive women, that guy wants to fuck every girl in the room.
Right?
Can we cuss on your? I just did.
Yeah, no problem. At all.
We're live, so it's too late now. But
it's fine.
We're past the 8-minute mark. We're all right. But yeah, so that guy wants to bang every girl in the room, right? That's typically how men are. And you know, if a guy is a monogamous minded guy, he doesn't necessarily have to act on those urges, right? Like we sort of can become aware of stuff and have some, you know, self-control, right? But other guys, you know, that's what they want to do. they want to bang all the girls in the room, right? But we all at least have that thought, right? We're like, ooh,
right, sure.
I'd hit it, right? And that's our, you know, monkey brain at work, right? So we don't really have a control over that. Women, if they walk into a room and there's a bunch of attractive guys in the room, they're trying to figure out who's the best guy in the room.
Right.
And they want to get with the one best guy in the room, and they're going to try to consolidate on the one guy. And that's just how women typically operate. And when it comes to like cheating, right? Or let's say, let's just say cheating. When it comes to cheating, a guy can still mentally and emotionally be loyal to his girl and go out and bang another chick and have it literally mean nothing to him. And it's just for variety. Women don't typically operate that way. Women, when they step out of their relationship, it's because they no longer see the guy they're with as their best possible option. And they're either looking for the best possible option, or they've found what they think is their best possible option. They start loving the guy that they are you know, having the affair with. That's usually what happens with women. That's also referred to as the mate switching hypothesis, when women are looking to leave a relationship and go with another guy. Sometimes women's hypergamy will work where they will stay with the guy that they're with because he's providing that beta comfort, but this guy over here is more exciting. You know, she's no longer sexually attracted to this guy anymore. He's a nice guy. You know, he keeps the food on the table, keeps a roof over her head and stuff like that. But this guy over here, she's really in love with this guy and she's banging this guy, you know, but she's not willing to leave the relationship quite yet. That happens too. But when a woman decides, okay, this is my best possible option now, I'm leaving this guy, that they refer to that as the mate switching hypothesis now, but it's all related. It's to me, it's all related, you know, just different different ways that hypergamy manifests itself.
And so it's, I mean, is it fair just to sum it up with hypergamy, just to say like women want to date up? They just want to date someone better than them, you know, more educated, more money, more social status. They just generally don't want to date down, where guys don't, we don't care about that. We actually don't want to date up. We that emasculates us on some level. It's, is that pretty much right?
That's, yeah, that's a part of it too. Yeah, definitely. You, a lot of guys, that what they'll do when they're out dating is they're trying to qualify themselves to this girl. They're like, hey, look, I make all this money. Hey, look, I could fix all this stuff. And hey, look how great I am. And that turns women off, mm-hmm. because they're like, why are you trying to sell yourself to me? You know, like that automatically puts you at a lower level than her. And subconsciously, she's looking at you like you're below her. And right. Women just won't date a guy that she thinks is below her in some way. So yeah, right. So it's best when you're out dating to try to get women to qualify themselves to you, because then they see you as someone that's better than them, that they have to prove themselves to. So that's another way we're trying to, you know, be strategic with it and use it to your advantage.
Well, you went over some great points in that video, and I took notes. I want to go over some of these for the guys that are watching. But, you know, like one of the things I wanted to ask about was, you talked about building a rotation of bitches, you know, where everybody starts with none, right? Like, and there's a way to build a rotation, like a process. And you didn't really get into it in the video, and I was curious to hear what that process was.
If you're enjoying this video, don't forget to hit the thumbs up button, leave a comment below, and subscribe to my channel. Feel free to share it also with a friend. I would greatly appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, a lot of that process is, I talk about it in my book. If you guys get my book, it's available on Amazon. It's called Everything I Wish I Knew When I Was 18. I go into that process, but high level, basically what you're doing is you're acting like you already have all the bitches, right? And what happens is when a guy doesn't have a woman, and he comes across as needy, you know, he hasn't had sex in a while. So when he goes out and dates, he's trying to lock girls down. He's overly available. He's texting all the time. You know, he's always asking her, hey, what are you up to? Trying to get her to go out multiple times a week and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that just sub communicates to a woman that you don't have any other options. And the thing is, women are attracted to guys that have options. It's called pre-selection. And, or it's also called, mate choice copying. But basically, a woman is more attracted to a guy that other women like. And a part of that is just a mental shortcut, right? Women, it takes a long time to get to know a guy, to see if he's a good choice, a good sexual choice, a good mate choice. And so a mental shortcut for them is, if other girls like him, he must be a good choice. Right. Whether that's true or not is irrelevant. So in order to build up your rotation, you have to act like you already have these women, which means you got to not be so available. You've got to not text so much. When, you know, when you're texting and making phone calls and setting up dates, you don't set up dates on Friday or Saturday nights. And the reason why you don't do that is because Friday or Saturday nights are prime date nights. And a guy that has options is probably going to be taken on a Friday or Saturday night. And so you don't do that kind of stuff, and you just sort of do all this strategy. And when a woman asks you, hey, are you seeing other people? You don't come out and say, yeah, I'm seeing all these women. Or, I mean, you could do that, but what you don't do is you don't ever say, no, I'm not seeing anybody right now. And most guys think that's what they want, or they think that's what women want to hear. Which is, no, I'm loyal to you. We just met on a dating app, and this is the first time we're talking in person, and I'm loyal to you already. That just comes across as needy. But if you go, you know, I always have room for one more, you know, that can mean that you have one extra woman, you have 10 extra women, you have no extra women. It can mean anything. And you just sort of let that hamster wheel spin in her head. And that they start thinking, like, maybe this guy has other options here. And so they start trying harder because they start seeing you as more of an attractive guy. They start competing for your attention. And so that's how you get the first one is by being an attractive guy. And that really just comes down to being attractive and not being unattractive and not being needy. And,
yeah.
And then, you know, then you, as you're building up your rotation and you get that one girl, you don't, a lot of guys will just stop doing that. They'll stop texting other women. They'll try to, they'll stop trying to source new dates and they'll just focus all their time and attention on the one girl. They're like, well, I got a live one here. I'm just going to go all in on this one chick. And then they become too needy and she ends up ghosting them and then they're crushed and they got to start the process all over again. And then they end up hating dating because it's such a slog, you know, but if you, as you're talking to this girl, you keep swiping on the dating apps or going out to the clubs or however it is that you're sourcing your women. And you keep trying to source new women, you try to keep, get new numbers, get new conversations going. And as you're talking to this chick, you're talking to this chick. As you're closing this chick for a date, you're closing this chick for a date. If you already have it lined up, you're still trying to line up like the rest of your free nights that week, you know, and you, that's how you build a rotation. You just, it's basically a sales funnel and you're just getting, you know, you're just funneling them all down until you have them in in-person dates and you never stop. You never stop building up that pipeline.
It's an it creates an abundance mindset, I'm sure too, because it'd be like having a bunch of money and then, you know, like, you know, you lose a few bucks, you're like, whatever, you know, I got tons more. Right. So that's the I think when you when you put all your eggs in one basket on one girl, it changes the dynamic of the relationship for sure. And like you said, women like what women like men that other women either like or already have, you know, for that matter. I think it's been even proven with like chimpanzees where like the chimpanzee without the mate, the girls don't want them, but it's the one chimpanzee that has a couple girls, all the other girls want that, that chimpanzee. So like for me, once I've seen discovered polygyny, it's like, I see it everywhere. It's just impossible to not see, even down to what you said, where, you know, men want to bang every hot girl in the room and women just want the best one.
Yeah. It's interesting too. I mean, there's lots of guys out there that, you know, anecdotally will say, they'll wear a wedding ring to the bar and they'll get hit on by other chicks and stuff like that. You know, it's very common. I've heard that from so many guys over the years. It's not even funny anymore. And I also think a lot of that too. I watched one video where this guy was saying that women can sense when a guy is already taken, whether he's wearing a wedding ring or not. And he's like, I don't know what it is. It's got to be, he's got to be, you know, putting out some kind of vibe or whatever. And I go, really, it's his, he's not needy, you know, because when he's getting his needs met, he doesn't give a shit. He sort of has this air of indifference, you know? And so a lot of times when hot women approach guys, they go gaga goo-goo over this hot chick and they treat her differently. They put her on a pedestal. But if a guy's already taken and he's happy in that relationship, a lot of times guys will just sort of ignore that girl and just sort of treat her like a human being, you know, like she's nothing special. And when you treat a girl that's hot, like she's nothing special, they're like, what's up with this guy? Like everyone else is lavishing me with compliments and simping over me. And this guy over here doesn't give a shit. Like what's up with him? And that just by itself makes her think, well, maybe he's good with women because, you know, like guys who are good with women don't put hot girls on pedestals, you know? So it's just all that kind of stuff just sub communicates that you might have other options and it just makes you more of an attractive guy.
So this would be a good time to mention that next week, Paul is going to do a training for the guys in my coaching program. He's got a process for how to turn internet strangers into dates. It's a whole formula. He actually has a course on it. So he's going to come in and teach some of the high level stuff there and also offer a discount for anybody that wants to take the full program. It's like 5 hours or something, right? Your full course is about 5 hours.
Yeah, the full course is 5 hours long and it's all on getting better with online dating because 70% of relationships start online now. Yeah, people just really aren't going out cold approaching like they used to. There's not a lot of social circle. You can still do that kind of stuff in the city. I mean, in cities, it's you have a lot of opportunities for that. But I live out in the middle of nowhere. I live out in ranch country. And so out in ranch country, there's no places to meet women organically out here. And so I had to learn how to optimize online dating so that I could be successful with it. So my whole course, the course is called There's No Cold Approach in the Cow Pasture. It's all just, you know, it's sort of marketed towards country folks that live out in the middle of nowhere, because there's lots of those guys. But it works everywhere. The processes that I take the guys through in the course, it works no matter if you're in a city. In fact, if you live in a big city, it'll work even better for you. So
yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah, it would have to work better if there's more of a concentration of women, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I came up with a course because there's lots of dating courses out there, right? But most every big name dating coach that I've ever seen, when guys that live out in the country say, well, what do? I can't go cold approaching. I can't, you know, do the social circle game stuff. I can't go to a club. There's no clubs out here. Almost every one of those guys say, well, you're going to have to move, man. You're going to have to move to a bigger city. You're going to have to fish where the fish are, right? You're going to have to fish in the bigger ponds. And it's like, well, what if you are in a situation like me where you can't move because you have a parenting agreement, right? I have two kids. I have 50-50 custody. If I want to move to, say, Denver or Salt Lake City, where I'd have more options, I'd have to give up custody of my kids. Well, that's not happening. So I had to make it work. And so I show guys that are in that kind of situation, like, how do you make this work? You know, and it's totally possible.
I can't wait to learn it, to be honest, because I think it's going to be super practical based off of what you've already told me. So for anybody that wants to join us in that, you can either, you know, sign up. I actually have a coaching program called Man of Options. It's funny you used that term earlier. You can reach out to me, message me privately, or you can email me. Rob@robbykowalski is my email.com, by the way. Or if you just want to sit in, you just want to purchase a seat, we'll do something very reasonable. It's going to be about an hour. It's not going to be the full program that Paul teaches, but it's going to be like a lot, as much meat as he can teach us in an hour. And then he's going to offer a super deep discount to take the full program. And the program is very reasonably priced. I think it's like $200, right?
It's under $200. Yeah.
It's under $200. Yeah. So if you want to purchase a seat, just drop the comment. What is the name of the approach? No cold approach in the cow pasture. Is that it?
There's no cold approach in the cow pasture. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Just drop the word seat and I'll go through the comments and try to find you. Or you could just reach out, sign up for the coaching program, which would be a little, you know, more of a commitment, but either way, I'm looking forward to that. It's a week from today, right? That we're doing that.
Yeah, I believe so. I'll have to check my calendar.
Okay. I think it's a week from today. Don't quote me on that. But, also, I just want to mention for anybody that's out there watching, because we're talking about what they call spinning plates, you know, dating multiple women. And that is something I encourage the guys in the program to do because of what we talked about, where it just removes the desperation from the women. Even if there is one that you really like and you want, you know, still talk to other girls. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm not advocating sleeping with them personally because I'm waiting myself and all the guys in my coaching program are waiting. But there's nothing wrong with having conversations with women and even going on dates with women, keeping your options open, especially until you're married, right? And then in all honesty, for the guys in my coaching program that believe in polygyny, they're going to keep their options open even after that, which I think is even divorce proofs your relationship, because I think a lot of the things that we're seeing and the problems in relationships, specifically marriages these days, is because of prescriptive monogamy, because the women, they lose the competition anxiety at that point because they know that you're not talking to other women. You can't, you know, it's illegal, you know, for you to marry anybody. And so they don't want to screw you anymore. They get fat. And then they file for divorce because, you know, they're not sexually attracted to you or whatever. Versus, you know, with even the option of polygyny keeps women on more interested and it creates the polarity. Dread. Exactly. Yes. Creates dread. And that's, I hate the term because it sounds so negative. Like you're trying to,
it's supposed to sound bad. Yeah.
Yeah. I tell the guys in the program, I'm like, listen, this is your biblical birthright. Like if you, I don't know how well you know the Bible, but there was this guy named Esau in the Bible. He was the older son of Jacob and he forfeited his birthright for a bowl of stew and God hated him for it. Like, so never forfeit your birthright. Doesn't mean you have to exercise it. You don't have to go out and take a second wife. Most men won't. But just the fact that you reserve that right, if you voice that, she's not going to like it, but she'll be turned on deep down by it. And I think it'll preserve that marriage, or at least you have a better chance of not being a statistic, in my opinion. But and just one verse I pulled up here that I wanted to add. I don't remember what you had said that triggered this, but this was Jesus. He said, "Now he who has will be given more, but from the person who does not have, even what he does have will be taken away." And I look at that with women. So it's like, look, you can be an alpha, and God's going to bless you. Raise your status, level up, and you can have more. But if you're a weak man, even the little you have is going to be taken away from you. So, because people will come back on me and say, well, if we did that, there'd be all these single men, and that would be devastating. I'm like, that's already happening. 80% of the women are sleeping with 20% of the men. So we don't need to get into that part of the conversation, but that's just kind of where I stand with it all.
Honestly, I mean, I don't know the full truth on this or not, but I mean, that's really why monogamous marriage was created in the first place, is every guy a shot, because all the the kings and stuff would just gather up all the women into harems, and there was all these guys that just weren't able to procreate, and it became unfair, and they were sad and we had to fix it. But now we have that problem today. There's all sorts of studies, and it's alarming, and the news is always talking about these studies of the rise of the incel move, incels and stuff, and there's all these guys that just aren't getting any. Mm-hmm. But they have no game, they have no game, and they also have no will to learn game, and a lot of those guys are just lazy bastards, and they play video games all day and jerk off and expect women to break into their house or something. Like, that's not how it works, man. If you want to get women, you gotta level up in some way. You gotta be the kind of guy that women want to get with.
What's the easiest way to do that? I mean, I know what you're gonna say, and you said don't be fat in that video, and I'm like, you're automatically gonna separate yourself from the majority of men. Is that the quickest hack to raise your SMV, your sexual marketplace value?
I think it's two parts, right? And the reason why I say that just don't be fat is because we have an obesity epidemic, mm-hmm. right? We have over 75% of the population in the United States of guys are obese right now. So if you just aren't fat, you're already in the top 25% of guys. Then on top of that, you need to learn social skills. You need to learn how to talk to people. And we have a whole other group of people that are introverts now, people that never leave their house. They're only online. They only chat with other people online. They're only in chat rooms and stuff like that. They never actually go out and talk to real people. They have no social skills. So I think those two things will give you an edge over most guys nowadays.
That's good. And then what would you say is third on that list? Would it be, would it be money? That's going to be a little bit of a longer game, I'd imagine.
I don't advocate for money, at all. Like, so, you probably heard of, you got to have muscles, money, game, and frame. That mm-hmm. was a concept that was made popular by, John MLD, Modern Life Day. He's the one that came up with that one. And I agree with that. Like, you do sort of want to have all four. That sort of makes you the complete package. But a lot of guys overly concern themselves with money, and then they lead with their wallet. Like, they'll take women on these lavish dates to try to, impress mm-hmm. the girl. They'll fly her to, Florida or whatever. I don't know. And it's like, dude, if you lead with that, women are happy to take advantage of guys that do that, So how do you find women that don't want you for your money? Well, you take money off the table. So what I say is, you want it that I would say frame is more important than money. You want to have mm-hmm. muscles, game, and frame. And those are like the three things that you want to optimize on. And then you could get girls if you're working at McDonald's,
Right.
There's plenty of losers out there that get girls because they have muscles or they have game, So
right.
I think the paramount thing is game, which is basically social skills, right? Muscles are good, but if you just aren't fat, then you're probably going to be okay. And then you have to have frame. You have to be a guy that's centered, a guy that knows what he wants in life and goes for it and isn't, you know, easily triggered by bullshit and doesn't get straight off his path easily. You know, women don't want a guy that they can control. They want to come up to you, and that a lot of women, they'll test you in the beginning. You know, they'll shit test you, and they'll try to see if they can knock you off your center. And if you just shrug it off and you're playful with it and you don't let them bother you, they're like, oh shit, I can't get my way with this guy. There's something about him. That's frame, you know. That's an example of frame. So yeah, you really want to work on all that.
You had used this acronym in that video called DEAR, right? Oh. So never defend, explain. What was it? What were the acronym?
Defend, explain, excuse, and rationalize. That comes from No More Mr. Nice Guy by Dr. Robert Glover. Mm-hmm. And that is something that a lot of guys do. Like a girl accuses you of doing something bad. Guys will try to defend themselves. No, I didn't do it. And then they explain why they did something and they try to rationalize it. Well, I only did it because I thought you would like blah, 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 right? That's all unattractive behavior. And it all puts her at a higher level than you. It makes her the sole judge of, you know, what's good and what's bad in the relationship. And right. If you're the leader in the relationship, you don't answer to her.
Right.
So if she's mad at you and accusing you of all this stuff, you just, you know, you don't want to defend yourself. You don't have to excuse your behavior. You just go, yeah, I can see you're upset by that. You know, I'm going to go get a sandwich. Right. Like that's kind of how you need to act about it. Right. Like don't let her have her emotional storm and have it not faze you. Right. But yeah, a lot of guys want to feel like they have to defend themselves all the time and they have to rationalize their decisions and all this. No, you don't have to explain yourself. You're the captain.
You know? Right. Love that. Treat yourself as the superior, like as if you were her boss on some level. You would never, you know, boss wouldn't explain themselves. So I don't, that's probably not the best analogy to compare it to a boss employee relationship, but yeah, you're the captain. Like you don't need to be rude about it, but you don't need to get into like defending yourself or, like you said, explaining and all the rest, because it definitely does at the very least put you at like equals, which I think on some level women want to be dominated by a man deep down. Maybe that's not even the right word, but it's they desire to submit to a strong man.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Women don't often admit this, but some do. But they want a guy that sets the tone and leads the relationship, and they don't want that responsibility. They don't want to be the one that's making the decisions. You know, they want to just show up looking hot. And what you'll find is even women that think that's what they want, because every relationship they've ever been in, they've had to be in control, because most guys defer their authority to the girl. And they're like, oh, no, honey, what do you want to eat tonight? Right. Oh, where do you want to go, honey? And what are we doing tonight, hon? Like, and she's got to make all the plans and everything. Women eventually take control of the relationship because someone has to, and then they resent the guy for it. Right. So if you come in and you're automatically a sort of dominant masculine presence and you're setting the tone and leading, and you know, a lot of women will kind of test you in the beginning too, right? They'll try to change the venue if you set a date. My girlfriend tried to do that. But I knew what I was doing when we were dating. So I said, hey, you know, we're going to meet for coffee. And this was like during the pandemic, or it was like right on the tail end where it was wrapping up. And she goes, do you want to just, instead of meeting at the coffee shop, do you want to just, you know, maybe go meet up at the park somewhere? And then like, I'll pick up the coffee and we'll go over to the park somewhere. And I go, no, we're going to go with our original plans. We'll meet at the coffee shop. And she was like, okay, cool. And then, you know, showed up to the coffee shop, like it was no big deal. And, It was an interesting time, because it was like, you know, you had to wear masks in the store, but when you're sitting down, you didn't have to wear masks, which I thought was retarded. And so I was like, you know what, let's go sit outside so we have to wear the stupid mask. And she's like, oh, okay. So we went out and sat outside, took the masks off and had a good time. But yeah, just me telling her what to do and like, hey, you're going to meet me at this place at this time. It was just setting the tone from the beginning, and she was like, I really like this guy. I don't know what it is about him. And ever since, like, she's now, she just sort of defers everything to me, you know. I make all the decisions. She doesn't question it. We've been together going on 3 years now. We've never had a single argument, and it's just easier that way. You know, I think if anything's ever come up that could have started or became an argument, it just was diffused immediately just because of how we interact with each other. And, you know, and I'm really good at handling shit tests. So, so we've never had an argument. It's pretty funny.
That's good. Yeah. It made me think of a few experiences with exes that were similar, right? We actually even way more intense. The girls tested me, and I often talk about, like, I've never been broken up with. A girl's never left me. Actually, one girl that got caught red-handed cheating, and she broke up with me, and she didn't come back. But that was obviously, you know, my fault. And it was egregious. It was really bad. But other than that, no, I've never been cheated on, and never had a problem keeping girls. But it definitely had a lot to do with understanding frame. I was always pretty good on that. Was there something I wanted to ask you? Oh, telling women what to do. That was something that you said in that video too. Like, and that was something I think you do that early, kind of test them. And one thing that I'll do sometimes, if there's a girl I'm talking to, I'm like, send me a selfie of you now. Mm. Right. Like, and I just want to see if they'll do it. Right. And so what are some of the stuff you tell your guys? Is there something that you tell them to do that early? Like, how's that work?
Yeah, that's a part of the three T's that I learned from Dr. Robert Glover, which was it's tease, touch, and tell. And those are different ways to build healthy emotional anticipation and tension when you're first interacting with a girl. And yeah, telling her what to do, it's just about setting the tone and leading. So right away, when I was closing for dates on a dating app, I would find a segue to set the date, and I would say, well, when are you you seem like a cool chick, let's get together for drinks. Like, when are you free to get together? And they would usually tell me when they're available, and I'd go, okay, cool. Thursday night, 7 p.m., meet me at this place at this time. So I'm not asking her, hey, would you like to go out? I'm not saying, what would you like to do? Or, you know, I'm telling her, you're meeting me at this place at this time. And what I found was, that by itself, that's just one example, but that by itself of telling her what to do, telling her where to meet me, I got more yeses with that. Women don't even have to think with that. It's like a short circuit. They just go, oh, okay, sounds good. And I found that women really responded well to that. They like that sort of dominant move. And then after I got them to say, yeah, that sounds good, the next thing I would do is I would say, you know, I really hate chatting on these dating apps. Give me your number. So I'm telling her, give me your number too. And that was just another, test of interest and see if she's compliant. And, you know, a lot of guys want a submissive wife that will follow their lead. That's how you do it. You test them by telling them what to do. And some girls won't. Some girls will be all pissed off, like, don't tell me what to do. And da 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 da. Well, you just unmatch those chicks because they just told you everything you needed to know. You know, you don't sit there and need to convince them. Like, we're done here. But you'll find that a majority of chicks will respond very well to that. Mm-hmm. And so you're just testing a woman's ability to follow your lead. And, you know, a woman that will follow your lead will typically be submissive and in her feminine in a relationship. And those are the women that you sort of want to spend more of your time with and cut loose the women that are going to give you a headache.
Yeah. I mean, and they want to be there. The woman, like you said, they'll try, but it's more of a test because maybe it's evolutionary or, you know, biology. They're trying to find the most alpha guy to see if you are as masculine as you look, but they really don't want to lead. And like you said, if you let them, they will resent you and eventually leave you.
Yeah. In that testing thing, it really just comes down to, them checking your congruence. You can also, some people call it shit tests, some people call it congruence tests, some people call them frame checks. There's all sorts of words for the same thing, but basically they're just testing to see if you're the strong masculine man they think you are, and they actually want you to pass those tests. They don't want to win. Women don't want to win.
It really boils down to fearlessness, right? Like, you have to be afraid to push your chips in at certain points and lose it. Like, even if you tell the girl, hey, give me your number. Mm-hmm. I mean, she doesn't do it. Unmatched, right? You're not afraid to lose it. And if even with a girl that you're dating, hey, no, we're going to meet here. Well, I don't, whatever. Then, okay, then we're not going to meet, right? Like,
yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, there's ways around that. You know, if a woman says, well, I don't like that place, you know, sometimes I'll say, oh, yeah, well, do you have a better suggestion? They'll say, oh, well, I like this place. It's always some kind of 5-star bullshit restaurant. Like, yeah, not on a first date. But I'll tell you what, we're going to meet up at this place. You're going to think it's great. And we'll go with my plan. And then, you know, if things work out, maybe we can go to your place another time. Mm-hmm. And then they'll, right. Okay. Sounds good. Because you didn't let them win. They didn't get their way with you and you stuck to your guns, and women like that.
Yeah. How did you frame that again? Like, as far as on the dating app, so you, as far as telling them, or, you know, setting up that first date, how did you frame that? What was the terminology used?
Well, I said, so I would find a segue to set the date. And then, and usually that would be something along the lines of after no more than 10 to 15 messages, right? Sometimes, mm-hmm. I mean, you can do it earlier if you're feeling it, right? But a lot of guys will text for days and weeks on end before asking a girl out. You want to get off that app quickly. So no more than like 10, 15 messages. What you'll want to find is like a natural segue in the conversation. A good way to do that is if a chick asks you a bunch of personal questions. You know, I would spin that on her and say, you know what? Those are in-person type of questions. Mm-hmm. Let's meet up for drinks and talk about it. When are you free to get together? Mm-hmm. So then that was how I would flip that around and segue into setting a date. That, and I'm basically just asking her when she's available. If she gives me like the days that she's available, I pick one of them, you know, whatever one's most convenient to me. I try not to ask for a date more than 3 days out on a dating app, or else the flake rate goes up. Mm-hmm. So if it's within 3 days, I'll say, okay, great. Meet me Thursday night at this place at this time. And I always would take women to the same place for a first date, because that way I don't have to think about it. And repetition is the mother of skill. So the more you go on this first date, you've been on this first date 1,000 times. The only person that's different is this chick. She's the only one that's going on this first date.
Oops.
Oh, did you cut out there?
Yeah, I lost you for a second. You said repetition what?
I said repetition is the mother of skill. So the more you go to the same place, the more you have that muscle memory. You're familiar with the place. You're familiar with what you can order. You're familiar with the waitresses and the staff. And you're more comfortable there because you know everybody. So sure. I always would just pick the same place. Like, hey, meet me at the Feisty Pint, 7 p.m. Thursday night. And nice. I'm telling them what to do. Yeah, that's how I would do it.
Super practical. Yeah, I was wondering how you do. So you do ask them when they're available, but you're not asking them, hey, would you like to go out sometime? It's just like, hey, when are you free, you know, to meet up for a drink or whatever, a bite, and then they tell you, and then you set the date. Got it. Okay, that's good. No, it's a lot. You provide a lot of really practical tips, even like the 3-day window, like not setting it further out than 3 days because the flake rate will go up. That's good.
Yeah. And it's a lot of stuff that I learned through trial and error. Lots of dating coaches say different things. And most of the time what dating coaches say is what worked for them. So yeah. A lot of what I say is what worked for me. So I always invite guys to test some of this stuff out, test it out, see if it works for you. See if something else, you know, might work better. Get lots of different information from different sources.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Kowalski Analysis. Thank you so much for spending your time with me. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you'd be so kind, wherever you're watching or listening to this podcast, leave a review. It helps more people find it, and I would greatly appreciate it. Thanks in advance, and have a blessed day.
Let's talk about the LUCA thing, the LUCA acronym that you mentioned. So you don't dare, you don't defend, explain. I forget now. What was the second E?
Defend, explain, excuse, and rationalize.
Okay, but you said you do LUCA. And what was that for? Yeah.
So LUCA is a acronym that Paul Benjamin from Apex Mindset came up with, and it's just a way of effective communication with anybody really, but it works in relationships. But it stands for listen, understand, communicate, action. So basically, when you're guys are terrible listeners. We're absolutely awful at it. And so you just want to listen to what your girl has to say. Because a lot of times when a woman's bitching and complaining, we're quick to defend ourselves and stuff like that. But instead, just don't defend yourself at all. And you just sit there and listen to her and go, And let me get this straight, right? So this is where the understanding comes in. You ask clarifying questions, right? So let's say she's mad because you didn't come home on Friday night because you're off banging side chicks or whatever. I don't know. But you don't come home Friday night and she's mad at you for not coming home. So she's yelling at you Saturday morning and you go, So let me get this straight. You're upset because I didn't come home last night. I didn't call you. I didn't tell you where I was. Is that right? And you don't defend it. You just acknowledge her feelings about it. And you're like, okay, and that made you feel like I don't care about you and you were worried about me. Is that right? You know? Okay. And you just try to get to the bottom of what she's actually feeling, right? And so that's a part of the communication part, right? You're just getting to the bottom of what she's feeling. And then your action plan would be, okay, well, I'll tell you what. If I'm out with the boys and we're going to be out a little bit late, I'll make sure that next time I communicate that to you. Is that fair? Right. So that's where the action stuff comes in. Paul Benjamin and I on Friday are going to go through it. He's actually going to be coming on the podcast because we're going to talk about that more. Because I do believe that communication is not the key to a successful relationship, like everyone says, because most women want a guy that just gets it. But it does have its place. You know, women aren't mind readers. Men aren't mind readers. We do at some point have to communicate certain things. Mm-hmm. So that's Luca's a helpful model for that.
How much success have you seen with your guys in your program or just maybe people that follow you? Because some of the stuff, like, you know, being an alpha, one question I've kind of wrestled with is like, how much of it is you're born with it, right? Because there are certain guys that are just have it. And then how much can be learned and applied? Because, you know, can fake it till you make it work and keep you in the game? Or does a true person emerge at some point? You know what I'm saying? Or is it just really a matter of sharpening those skills and always being mindful? I mean, you know, how much of it's natural versus can be learned, I guess?
Well, I would say everything can be learned unless you have some kind of learning disability, right? Like I think a lot of guys that gravitate to the space, there's a lot of guys that are on the spectrum. Maybe they're autistic or they have Asperger's. Those guys have a hard time understanding social skills in general. So those guys have an uphill battle. Those guys need to see, I think, you know, professional support to work through that kind of stuff. I don't think just getting with a dating coach and trying to understand game, because a lot, especially like the Asperger's guys, they see everything as black and white. There's a lot of nuance with game. You know, like we have all these hard and fast rules, but they're really just guidelines, and you have to know when to break them in certain times, because sometimes girls throw curveballs at you. You know, so you have to be able to think quickly on your feet and color outside the lines a little bit. So those guys, I think, struggle. Anybody else can learn this shit. Anybody else can. And so I've had several guys with me, and some of them it's a longer process than others. And a lot of guys, their problem is that they're avoidant, right? They will, and I'm not talking about like attachment style. They're just avoiding their problems, right? Something's uncomfortable to them, and so they will put it off and avoid it. That's a big problem I see. But other guys will go all in. You know, they'll go all in, and you'll see these massive transformations. One of my clients, man, that guy had like a 15-year dry spell with women and decided he needed to work on himself. He's still a work in progress, but like the first date I got him on, he got laid with this chick. And I was like, what the fuck, dude? You just went out there and got laid? He's like, yeah, I just sort of followed the process. And I was like, Yeah. It's a process. You just got to make it a part of who you are, you know. Mm-hmm. There's some things he could have done better, but we're working on that stuff. So yeah, I think most guys can learn this stuff. The guys that are like naturals at it, you know, what a big problem with those guys is they'll be really good at dating and they're able to get women easily and they're able to keep them around for the short term. But when they get into like any kind of long-term relationship commitment, they tend to get betatized over, you know, through 1,000 concessions. And cause it, you know, we're all raised to do this stuff. We're all raised to be defective women these days, even these, you know, blue-pilled alpha guys. And their relationships start crumbling and they're like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Ryan Stone in his book Dread refers to those guys as type one captains, guys that were attractive in the beginning and they slowly lost their alphaness over time. And then their girlfriend's not acting right anymore and doesn't respond to his authority anymore. And those are the easiest relationships to fix because the guy just needs to get back to being an alpha guy again, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's all sorts of, you know, variables with all this stuff, but yeah, guys can absolutely learn it.
That's good. Well, if anybody's got any questions, maybe we'll take a few questions for Paul. If you guys have anything out there or drop your favorite takeaway, we covered a lot here tonight. One other question I guess I had is, do you have any specific advice? Because like how do you navigate hypergamy if you're a man of faith? And he's waiting. Like he really wants to wait till his wedding night to have sex. Does that change anything of the strategy, your current strategy, would you say? Or is it all pretty much the same except for the sex?
Man, I don't know if I could really speak to that because I've never been a religious guy that ever wanted to wait. So I wouldn't be a good guy to speak to that too. And a lot of, I would say that a guy like that would have an uphill battle these days because relationships don't start and then you go have sex anymore. Like relationships start because you had sex with somebody. That's totally. It's like in the way I would imagine it. I'm sure it's not impossible. I know guys do it. But I wouldn't be the right guy to speak to that, I don't think.
Yeah, okay. I appreciate your honesty. I'm having a guy on my podcast that Rich had named Casey Jones. He's this guy in Australia. He's an ex veteran. He's a veteran. He's an ex porn star and he's got 6 wives and he was big in the BDSM world, bondage, domination. I forget what it stands for, but anyway, mm-hmm. And Rich was like, yeah, he's got a body count in the hundreds, maybe, you know, over 1,000. And I was thinking about it the other day and I'm dating a girl and I'm having conversations with some other girls lately. But my, you know, I do believe that polygyny is probably the path that God's going to take me down. And I'm thinking to myself, this motherfucker, right? He's got 6 wives. I guarantee you he was sleeping with these girls. And then one by one, he just married them, right? Like, I'm like, that's so much easier than what I'm doing and what the guys in my coaching program that want polygyny are doing. Because to get a girl to sign up for pre-sex is a very hard task, to sign up for polygyny, because after you sleep with them, they get attached and then they're more likely to do something a little bit unconventional or just put up with more of your shit. I mean, I know there were girls I was sleeping with and when I was whoring around and they tolerated some very bad behavior on my part because they were so attached to me. And I know that the sex played a part in that. So yeah, you're right. It is an uphill battle. Like I was definitely thinking about that. I'm like, this is, you know, you really got to be a G. You got to understand everything that you mentioned, frame, game, muscles, and what was the other one? Game,
muscles, money, game, and frame.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you included money in there, but yeah, you have to be really on point.
The money's for you. The money's your money. Yeah. Yeah. When it comes to that sort of thing, I mean, it's rough too, because, I like to say men spin plates, women just call it dating. Women, when they're out dating and they're not exclusive with guys, they naturally weigh their options. They naturally go out and see other guys. They might not be sleeping with all the guys, but they naturally go out and see multiple men And they're literally looking for their best possible option when they do that. And so if you're the kind of guy that, you know, you're waiting till you're waiting for marriage to have sex, and she's, you know, women will want to have sex with a guy by the second or third date on average. So if by the third date, she's like all pushing up on you going like, let's do this, take me, you know, ravage me now and stuff. And you're like, I'm not going to do that because of, you know, because of my faith or whatever. She might be okay with it. And it's actually a good sign that, you know, she's sexually attracted to you at that point. But it's like the modern women these days are only going to wait so long, and they have all these other options. So they're probably out fucking other dudes now. Right. And if you're the guy that's not doing it, they're going to be like, man, I really like this guy, but he's, you know, he's not putting out, which is a kind of a guy thing to say. Right. But that's what women think, that if you're not putting out with them, like women can't handle, they can't handle that rejection that well. So I think they would almost, these modern women would be more apt to cut a guy loose like that, you know, from their, you
know, 100%.
So that's, yeah, that would definitely be a struggle.
I know. So I was abstinent for the first 6 years I was a Christian. And there was one girl specifically that I felt like God told me was the girl for me, and she wanted to sleep with me, and I wouldn't do it. And I know if I fucked her, if I planted the flag, I would have had her, because that's just how it works. And I didn't do it, and I didn't end up getting her. And I was like, damn. So, but you know, I still tell men to wait, because, and this actually is a good comment here that kind of ties into what we're talking about. I don't think it's a problem to have sex before marriage, as long as your intentions are pure. I don't think the great men of the Bible who practiced polygyny waited. So, well, how do you know your intentions are pure if you don't wait? That's my question. Because, like, I can convince myself of a lot of things, right? If I could say, oh, yeah, I love her, let's bang, right? Like, but if you say, well, would you marry her? Well, wait a second. Let me think about this. It's going to change the conversation. So, like, and you know, you screw a girl, you say your intentions are pure. Well, what if you get her pregnant? I mean, like, there's a lot of variables there. And I think yes, if you married the girl after sleeping with her, you're probably not sinning, but that doesn't happen very often. Usually what you do is you fuck her, and then as soon as you come, you're like, you start seeing all the flaws.
Then you get that post-nut clarity.
Exactly. So, like, I want to avoid all that, but it is a much, much harder way to go about it. And I could even see how it comes off a little feminine to the woman. If you're like, what? You won't have sex with me. Like, when there's, you know, so like the girl that I'm talking to now, like she knows I'm very masculine, and I could get laid if I want to get laid, and I'm choosing to do this because I love God, you know, and I want to be obedient to Him. But it's not because she thinks I'm, you know, she doesn't think I'm feminine in any kind of way by doing it. But it definitely can be perceived that way for sure. So yeah, I mean, but I still am going to encourage men, be obedient, because you know, it matters. And it really, I mean, if you look at people, sex can really fuck your life up. You know, not only get you into a relationship with the wrong person, but unwanted pregnancies and all kinds of things that really could impact your life for a long period of time. So that's just my suggestion. I know that might be not your advice, but that's just what I tell guys to do is to wait, even though it is the harder way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily try to tell guys like how they should live. I tell them, like, you know, like for you, the waiting till marriage thing is what you feel is best for you. Cool, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not gonna say you're doing it wrong, bro. Like, like my way is not the best way necessarily. And that's what I love about the red pill space, is it's all about being your mental point of origin and doing what's best for you. You know, if you're a kind of guy that never wants to get married, just wants to spin plates forever and just be a, you know, just be a casual dater, cool. If you want to be a guy that gets married and gets the state involved in their relationship, I wouldn't recommend that, but you know, whatever. There's guys out there that's the end state for them. But yeah, so I just, guys need to do what's best for them. I will say this. So you know, Glenn Lawrence, right? Glenn Lawrence is a friend of mine, and he, you know, he's in the Christian red pill space. And I he hates when I say this, but I always joke with him about it. And I go, I go, dude, the best thing about being a Christian is you can do horrible shit and just apologize at the end and you get in for free. So just fucking do it and just say you're sorry at the end. You're all right. And he's like, that's not how it works. And he's he gets so mad at me for that. But
right. Well, there are consequences to our sin. I mean, just because you're forgiven doesn't mean you're not going to suffer. People on death row don't get out because they found Jesus. They're still going to be in jail for the rest of their life. But this was something I asked Rich Cooper. I'll ask you. Do you believe in the golden rule?
Do unto others, that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a pretty solid rule to live
by. Okay. Most religions are based on that, right? So how do you reconcile telling men to go out, knowing that it lowers a woman's value or body count? How do you reconcile telling men to rack up, sleep with women, because you know that that's hurting them, the women? And that really, if you're talking about karma, mm-hmm. it's going to come back on you.
If you believe in karma.
Well, that's the golden rule. And some, well, okay, maybe doing to others is the golden rule, as you would have to do. So let's just say your sister or your mom. You don't want somebody just going out and banging your mom. I don't think you do anyway.
I don't think anyone wants to at this point. She's pretty old now, but yeah. Like, so, I mean, I don't know, like for my, I think women, women have, they can make their own choices, So I that's the way I look at it. Like we're all, we all have free will. So it's really on them on how they want to proceed. And, mm-hmm. I'm not out here trying to control other people.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining my Facebook group. Now, if you want the best piece of advice I've ever been given on having success with the opposite sex for free, go to my website, robbkowalski.com, and join my email list. I'll send you valuable content and just keep you up to date on everything that's happening in my life. Thanks.
But yeah, for my daughter, right, I have a daughter. I give her different advice than I give my son. My son, I tell him, don't even think about getting married until you're at least in your 30s. You want to spend your 20s like having fun, building your fortune. You don't want to get tied down into anything serious. And then my daughter, she's off at college now. She's getting ready to go to law school. I'm like, yeah, good. Go to law school. Meet a lawyer. Marry a lawyer. Have kids when you're 25. That's what I tell my daughter, And it's like, but I tell my son, you don't need to get the state involved in your relationship. If you want to have kids and stuff like that, you can have a successful long-term monogamous relationship without getting Uncle Sam involved in your relationship.
Yeah.
But my daughter, I'm like, no, do it. Do it. No, get married, right. Get the state involved. Cause you get all sorts of cash and prizes when you're done. Right. So it's just, take advantage of the situation. So I don't know, different rules for different people.
Right. Well, that's where it goes back to the fact that we're all humans, right? We're all, so like the same guy that, is out there and he's got kids, now your son's banging his daughter, but she told, if everybody just told their kids the same thing, my advice would be like, listen, get married when you're young, keep polygyny open as an option, because I think, and we don't need to, maybe we'll get onto this on your podcast, but what I think that would do is it would make marriage a lot more attractive than like going out and polluting the dating pool and sleeping with all these women like I did. I can marry one at a young age, enjoy her, and then if I decide when I'm 25 to have another, I have another, maybe another one when I'm 30, and I would have probably got married young. Why not? Like instead of waiting for that one unicorn to come along, and then you go out and you funk up the dating pool and create and make it harder for those women to pair bond later. And then you got rampant divorce, and it's a mess. But
I did get married when I was young. I got married when I was 19.
What happened there?
I was too fucking stupid to know what the fuck I was doing. And I rushed into it because I was like, white picket fence, and you got to be married with 2.5 kids. And I just didn't know what I was doing. I didn't properly know how to vet women. I didn't know how to set the tone and lead a relationship. I didn't know any of that stuff. And I got into a relationship with a gold digger who, she was really just looking for early retirement. And a lot of, traditional Christian guys might think that's a great thing, right? Oh, I want a woman that's going to be a stay-at-home mom and a homemaker, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to be the breadwinner. Well, that's how I was raised too. And I get my now ex-wife, and that's exactly what she wanted. She wanted to not work, paramount, not work. And then the kids or anything, like we're sort of just a hassle to her. She was like the epitome of the kind of mom that would, you know, take the kids to like play dates and stuff like that so that they would be entertained, so she could have social time with other moms. She if they had tablets back then, she would be the tablet mom, or here, take this tablet, shut the fuck up, I'm going to watch Oprah. Mm-hmm. She just didn't want to work. She stopped doing all the housework around the house and all that kind of stuff. So I would come home after working, and I work in IT. It's pretty stressful. Sometimes I'd have like 17-hour days. I come home and nothing's done. I'm like, the fuck? Like, I got to clean up this house too. And like, anyway, yeah. I'll go off on a tangent there. So I actually did exactly what you said. I didn't taint the dating pool all through my 20s, and I, you know, protected all these women by not fucking them. The thing is somebody's going to be out there fucking them. So you might as well be you. I don't know. I definitely take more of a red pill stance, where a red pill is very much like you take morality out of it. Everyone's got their own morals, and, you know, so you gotta do what's best for you. If you're morally object to going out and spinning plates and having sex with lots of women because you're afraid of tainting these poor women, then don't do it. You know.
I heard somebody posted this in my comments once. They said the problem with red pill guys is they recognize the world is burning and they bring marshmallows. And I'm like, it's kind of true. Like, in order to turn it around, we're all going to have to, or at least as many of us as possible, we're going to have to try to fix the problem. And I think polygyny is just such a great practical way to clean everything up. But
what most red pill guys really, what it comes down to is, instead of trying to change the world, right, you sort of think globally, but act locally. Just manage your own personal relationship and worry about yourself and your own personal relationships and not really worry about what everyone else is doing. I think that's most of our philosophies on that. There's a lot of, you know, TradCon podcasts and conservative and Christian podcasts out there. They're like, okay, we've got to shame these whores into so that they stop being whores so we can fix this and we can put the toothpaste back in the tube that feminism unleashed. Right. And red pill guys aren't like that. We're sort of looking at it like, okay, well, this is the way the world is, not what it should be. So how do we navigate through what is, right? And that's really what red pill comes down to. It's more practical. I would say practical based on how do we navigate with our current situation. It is good. I would say it's good, though, that there are guys out there that are trying to solve the problem. Whether the problem's going to get solved ever, I don't know. I mean, feminism really did a number on everything.
Dude, I heard of that the other day. I posted it by that Just Pearly Things. You probably actually know her. Do you know her?
I've chatted with her a couple of times. I've been on her show once, but I don't know her like on a, you know, a deep level or anything. We're not like friends or anything.
Well, she posted a statistic video where she was talking, and it was a very reputable source, maybe Forbes or something like that. But by the year 2030, 50% of women aged 25 to 45 are going to be single and childless. I'm like, that's wild, right? Like, marriage is basically dead. And I'm just curious to hear, considering the dynamics, just the way things are right now, what do you think the future of the dating scene looks like?
I think the future of the dating scene is going to be a lot less long-term, monogamous relationships and just a whole lot of casual dating and they might be in a monogamous relationship, but most of those are going to be like 6 months to a year to 2 years, and then you're going to move on to your next one. People are going to stop actually getting married because that whole process of the divorce process is going to be so painful that people are going to realize like there's no benefit. You know, the women benefit, but the guys are going to strongly realize that there's no benefit for them, and so they're going to stop doing it. So women are going to realize like, okay, well, that's a lost cause, And that's just what you're going to see. You're just going to see a lot of short-term, long-term relationships, I think, is what we're going to end up seeing. Yeah, yeah, and it's sad too, man. Like the when gay marriage came out, like during the Obama administration, the tail end of his first term, I can't remember, but when they legalized gay marriage, there was all these people that are like, well, that's it, that's the end of the institution of marriage and all this stuff, and I was like, man, the divorce industry killed marriage a long time ago. You know, now these guys just get to feel the pain with like the rest of us. You know, that's really what it comes down to.
They can be miserable with the rest of them. Any last thoughts for, you know, navigating hypergamy for any of the men that are out there listening? Any last advice?
Yeah, really. What I have been preaching to guys is they look at statistics that women are only going for the top 20% of guys or the top 5% of guys, depending on the channel you look at. Instead of overly concerning yourself with bullshit statistics that hold you back, instead of thinking why you can't do something, think about why you can or how you can do something. How can you get in the top 20% of guys? How can you get in the top 5% of guys? And work from there. Because if you start thinking about how you can do something, you'll start coming up with solutions to your problems. Just thinking about why you can't do anything just keeps you where you're at.
That's good. Good advice. So, guys, just a reminder, if you want to attend that live training next week with Paul on how to turn internet strangers into dates, then drop the word seat in the comments, or you can just private message me if you like. Or you can go to manofoptions.com, sign up for my coaching program. And yeah, man, I'm grateful that I met you, and look forward to next week's training. And tell everybody how they can find you and then anything you want to promote. I know you got a coaching program, you got a course, you got a book. Tell everybody about all that.
Yeah, so definitely get the book, guys. It's available on Audible. My good friend RP Thor did the narration for it. It's called Everything I Wish I Knew When I Was 18. Talks about all this stuff. It's just great life advice for men in general. It basically runs the gambit from managing your money, maintaining your finances, getting out of debt, picking good careers if you're a young guy and you haven't figured out how to pick a good career yet. Talks about dating and spinning plates and how spinning plates is the most efficient way to date, no matter what your end goal is. If you want to get into a monogamous marriage, spin plates. it's just the most efficient way to date. I do talk about how to maintain long-term relationships in there. And then I do talk about marriage. If you do get married, some things you need to consider legal wise and stuff like that, if you want to pull the trigger, and then also some things to consider when it comes to kids. So it's a solid book for that. You can get that on Amazon or on Audible. And if you go to comeonmanpod.com, you could find the book there. You could find the coaching program. You could find me on all the social media, and you can subscribe to my podcast. And I have new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Nice. And what's the beer club?
Beer club. Yes. We have some guys in the beer club right now in the chat. Beer club's my men's group. It's a simple group for men. I wouldn't consider it a coaching program. It's just an outlet for guys to get together, like-minded guys to get together and talk about guy stuff, whatever their problems are. A lot of guys don't have any kind of outlet like that. They don't have a men's group, and it's just good for our mental health to do that. A lot of guys will get into a relationship. They will dump all their problems on their girl. The girls don't care about your problems. And they'll lose attraction for you over time if you keep doing that, right? They're not your mother. They're not your therapist. So don't treat them like that. They're your lover. And as long as you treat them like that, your relationship's probably going to be good. So if you are going through shit, because guys do go through shit, bring it to the beer club. It's a good outlet for that. And then we meet once a month. Last 2 months, we've had two meetups. In fact, we have a meetup tomorrow night. And we do that over Telegram. We do a video call over Telegram. We guys just get together and have drinks. And if you don't drink alcohol, drink water. It's okay. We're not judging you. And just get together and shoot the shit. And if you are going through something, bring it up. If you're not, talk about fucking cars or whatever. It doesn't matter. But the guys really like it. It's a very active group of guys.
That's great, man. I love what you're doing for guys' mental health. We need more of that. So, guys, I would recommend, we've got more people on right now than we did earlier. I would go back through and watch this with a pen and paper and take notes, because Paul said a lot of practical stuff. He dropped a lot of good tips, a lot of nuggets in this one. So, man, thank you again for, I know we ran a little bit over than the hour that we originally had scheduled, but I appreciate you coming on, and I look forward to next week.
Yeah, man. Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
All right. Guys, if you'd be so kind, share this episode. Again, drop a comment with your best takeaway. And if you haven't subscribed to the podcast, do that too. All right. I'll see you next week.